Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across the table from me is my lovely wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing, honey?
Oh, I'm great, Dan. How are you?
Oh, you know what? I think I know why you're great, and I think it's because we've got a probably full, like, 24 hours separated from the last time you watched any Battlefield Earth.
And every second that passes, I'm further and further away from it.
Yes, yes. So life's getting better. Things get better, honey. That's what we're talking about today is the 2000 classic Battlefield Earth. This is a...
That's the year 2000.
Yes, it came out in the year 2000. Battlefield Earth is a saga of the year 3000.
That's right.
This is a pet project by John Travolta that he wanted to get done for years and years, dating back to the early 80s, because he wanted to get L. Ron Hubbard, who I believe is a science fiction writer and not famous for anything else. I think John Travolta was a big fan of his and wanted to bring his lore to the screen, and boy did he. He joins Forrest Whitaker, who I felt bad for every time I saw him on screen because he is above this trash, and Barry Pepper?
He's a guy. Good old Barry Pepper.
Yeah, he's been in a couple things.
Barry Pepper looks like the David, that sculpture by Michelangelo.
Like old Greek sculptures?
It actually looks like the David, like that, the same face. They have the same face.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. He has like an old-timey looking face.
I can see it. I can definitely see it. He was a thing for a little bit. I want to say, like, I know Giovanni Ribisi was in Saving Private Ryan, and I always thought he was in this movie, but I must be thinking of Barry Pepper. Giovanni Ribisi is a Scientologist as well.
Oh, he is. Oh, yeah, damn, yeah, that sucks.
So yeah, this is Barry Pepper, is the star as Johnny Goodboy Tyler.
Doesn't that sound like a Buddy Holly era musician name, Johnny Goodboy?
It does, and also I don't recall ever hearing it in the film. I'm sure it's said at some point, but the whole time I'm taking notes, I was just typing like "man animal escapes," you know.
Yeah, I have no idea what, like, during the whole movie, I didn't know what anyone's name was. I only, like, after the fact, when I was like looking at the cast, did I know that his name was Johnny Goodboy Tyler. I feel like I definitely would have remembered if I had heard that name.
Me too. I think I definitely heard Kerr. K-E-R-R is the name of Forrest Whitaker, because I remember taking a note of that.
John Travolta's name is Turl.
Yes, so the main villains of Battlefield Earth are Turl and Kerr.
Wait, what was the name of the... Not that it makes any fucking difference, but the name of that, like, the big boss guy that...
Oh, the big, like, emperor dude or whatever.
Yeah.
He looks like Rip Torn. I really...
You could tell, like, they didn't dig into that guy a lot because they expect there would be sequels, and, like, that would be the big bad throughout the whole series, I bet.
I think they did because Battlefield Earth was actually a 1,050-page book by L. Ron Hubbard, and this covers the first half of that book. So Travolta, in interviews, has said that this is going to be two movies. Obviously, it tanked, and that did not happen. But let me just say a couple things before we really get into it. These are things that John Travolta said during press appearances, late-night shows and the like, before this movie came out. These are all exact things that John Travolta said about Battlefield Earth. It's like Star Wars, only better.
That's true.
It's like Pulp Fiction in the year 3000, and it's the Schindler's List of science fiction. Those are things that John Travolta said about this movie. So it's very clear that, like, this is obviously one of the worst movies ever made. It's so schlocky and terrible and everything. But, like, to Travolta?
No, wait a minute.
What?
The Schindler's List of science fiction. Like, what is the Schindler's List of? Like,
it's just like
historical...
like Oscar-winning dramas, I think. Like, super serious, you know, like, cinema, you know.
He thinks this is an Oscar-winning drama?
I think they're laughing throughout the whole movie. I think he's trying to say that, like, Schindler's List is, like, the peak of, like, Hollywood drama, and this is, like, the peak of Hollywood sci-fi. I think that's what he's trying to say. Like, the Schindler's List of sci-fi.
All right.
Which is just... Ooh. Like, it's very clear that Travolta cares very deeply about this film, obviously, and putting millions of his own dollars into the making of this, and obviously this being tied to L. Ron Hubbard and everything. Like, this was a very important project for Travolta. But, oh, God.
Well, let me just say one thing. I thought initially that Battlefield Earth was a movie about, like, a specific story in the Scientology universe. I thought it was, like, kind of like The Passion of the Christ, but for Scientologists. And
oh,
when
no.
I learned that it wasn't that, that it was just based on another work of science fiction that L. Ron Hubbard wrote, my expectations raised considerably. Not, and they were really low, so they still weren't high. But, like, I was like, all right, it's not going to be horrible. But it was really bad.
Because you felt like, oh, okay, it's just based on a piece of fiction, not like a belief system.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yeah, but turns out L. Ron Hubbard wrote both of those things. And he, not a great writer, as you can tell from this.
Well, he didn't write the script for the movie. Well, right. I never read any of his. Maybe his science fiction is good. I never read any of his. Well, I know the Scientology stuff is, like, bad, but, like, I never read his book, so,
yeah.
Like, I don't know.
He's not really held in the greatest esteem outside of the Scientology religion.
So why him, though? There are so many really good writers out there. Why was he in a position to write or create a cult? Why was he in the position to create a cult?
I mean, that's a much larger conversation. That is a much bigger thing. We're not going to get into the weeds with Scientology here, but we can... Yeah, I don't even want to get in the weeds in Battlefield Earth. Let's do the broad strokes of Battlefield Earth.
Yeah. And also, like, every scene was mumbled through. I couldn't hear what they were saying in most of the scenes.
Yeah.
At any given scene, I had no idea what was happening. I didn't know what the motivations were. I know that Johnny Goodboy wanted to save his girlfriend at some point, but who cares about her? She was, like, there for one scene in the beginning.
Yeah, they never really established, like, okay, at the beginning of the movie, we see a little bit of this, like, Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, man is this endangered species, post-apocalypse on Earth, you know, so it's like a lot of overgrown cities and things like that. Like, we see, like, Denver, a lot of this movie is set around Denver, and it's just, like, nature's taken over. There are malls that are just covered in dust and vines and all sorts of stuff. And that is when we see Johnny Goodboy in his, like, village, and he does have a girlfriend or something. Again, she's not established at all. I don't know if they ever give her a name or anything. We see her briefly at the beginning, and then she's completely forgotten about for most of the movie. But it doesn't take long to realize that everything at this movie is shot at a extreme angle.
Yeah, it's very jarring.
I believe it's called a Dutch tilt. And the whole time I just wanted to put a bunch of napkins underneath my entertainment center on one side so it looked like a normal movie. But it is all tilted and tinted. Everything is like greenish or bluish or purplish. It all just looks very cheap sci-fi.
Yeah, nothing is clear.
No.
And
no.
Not nothing. Not even what's happening is clear.
And it's not in a stylized way. Yeah, it's not clear both in terms of aesthetics and just the camera angles and everything. Also, it's just not clear based on what anyone is saying. I don't know how many times you turned to me during this movie and you were like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, I don't understand any part of that scene, and I was not much help at all. So the basic thing is, you got the humans. And then you got the, oh God, the Cyclos.
Yes.
From Planet Cyclo.
Doesn't that sound like a frozen dessert that would be sold at like a Dairy Queen-esque place? The
yes.
Cyclo.
Yeah, I'll take a green apple Cyclo, please. Yeah, so, all right.
Wait, describe the Cyclos. They're,
okay, the Cyclos are giant at the beginning.
Well, at the beginning, they try to make it seem like the Cyclos are like much larger humanoid creatures than humans, but at like towards the end, they get really lazy about it and kind of forget that scale thing.
Yeah, I don't know if they're doing like Lord of the Rings stuff, like the angles to make them look bigger, yeah. Or if it's just like giant boots or whatever, but it is pretty inconsistent throughout the movie.
They're wearing these big-ass boots, and then they have these gloves on their hands are big and hairy, and sometimes they have extra fingers. Sometimes they have more than five fingers.
I could have sworn that. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. At some point, I was like, oh, I guess they have six fingers, and then later I was like, oh, maybe I saw that wrong. Maybe
yeah,
they have five.
Same,
okay,
same.
So we both saw that.
And
okay.
Then they have, like, really tall heads.
Yes, and they have, like, predator hair.
They have, like, dreadlocks, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird predator hair, these giant eyebrows. Some guys have really weird, like, giant Fu Manchu mustaches and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And they all wear, like, black leather bodysuits. They look like cyber people.
Yeah, with like cod pieces and these.
Oh my God, the cod pieces.
Yeah.
That it makes the crotches on the guys look absolutely absurd.
Yeah, for what is supposed to be this giant dominant alien race, it just makes them look so fucking dumb. Like everything about their look looks
fucking
they're dumb.
They're not like smart. They look like idiots. They don't know anything about this race that they've been enslaving. You think they would have picked up on some of the culture of humans after like coming to the planet and enslaving us, where there's like evidence of our culture everywhere. They don't even know, like, Turl, who is a high-ranking Cyclo.
Yeah, oh, he's the head of security.
He's the
yeah.
head of security, whatever the fuck that means. Doesn't even know what humans like to eat. Like, he sees them desperately eating a mouse at one point, and he assumes that's their favorite food.
Yes, and so we hear him say rat brain 8,000 times.
Oh my gosh, and all the words that are repeated in this movie, okay? Like, every scene has at least one or two man animals in
yes.
it.
Yes.
Everyone's always talking about leverage.
Yes.
And everyone's rat brain.
Yep, those are the three. Leverage, rat brain, and man animal, I wrote down as things that are just constantly being said.
Always talking about leverage.
Yeah. So, The lack of, like, intimidating, like, aesthetic for the Cyclos carries over into, like, okay, so John Travolta is the most prominent big bad guy in this movie, but he's John Travolta, who has never really been intimidating in anything, even, like, Pulp Fiction when he's, like, this mobster guy. But he is just so, like, fancy talking in this, like, they kind of try to make him look tough with the big boots and the codpiece and the hair and all this, but then he talks like, oh, while you were learning to spell your name, I was trained to conquer galaxies.
He was like an uncool version of Vegeta.
okay.
Right?
Yeah. I think that's still an insult to Vegeta. Yeah, Vegeta is on a different level.
They both have similar hairlines as well.
I guess, yes, you've got that. Yeah, but as far as just being like this shitty, self-serving alien or whatever, like, yeah, that's definitely...
Oh, can I just say one thing, too, about how these Cyclos look?
Yes.
Oh, first of all, some faces look like crazy alien faces, and other faces look more human. I don't get what determines that. But also, like, John Travolta's eyebrows are bonkers long.
Yes.
Like, they're being pinned back by those hair clips, and they go all the way down. They're super long. Like, eyebrows don't get that long. I know he's an alien guy, but seriously. And then, conversely, the women, I think Kelly Preston,
oh my God,
his
yes.
wife, she's always in movies with John Travolta. I know they're a husband and wife, but it's, like, really weird. It's, like, it seems like it's a Mike Pence situation where she doesn't trust him, but we're
on
other
guys. She has to be on the
guys.
Set, and while she's there, it's like, oh, okay, I'll put on the dumb cone head thing.
Yeah, but so, conversely, her eyebrows are completely painted on.
It's painted on, along with the other few, like, cyclo women we see who just operate this weird salon at one point.
Oh, my God, what was that salon? That was so crazy.
I don't know what they're doing. They're just, like, rubbing everyone's heads and...
Turl is getting a, I guess, a manicure. Like, this woman's just filing down his claws with what looks like a Dremel. And then Kerr,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Kerr.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not Kerr. It's that other crazy-looking alien with, like
oh, it's the one with the big chin.
The, like, double or triple chins, but it's all hard and solidified, and it's so obvious he's wearing a mask. Like, yeah. They didn't put any effort into that whatsoever. But he's just sitting there, and this other cyclo lady is just lightly touching his head.
Yeah.
What is that?
Don't know.
Like, okay, I'll be honest, and I've talked about this before. The best part about going to your hair salon to get your hair done is when you get shampooed by another person. Because they kind of massage it. You feel their nails. It just feels so much better. It's like trying to... You can't tickle yourself. Like, if I massage myself, it doesn't feel good with someone else. But that was not what that was. Like, this guy didn't even have hair to massage.
Yeah, and there was no evidence of any kind of shampoo or massage. It's just a hand on the head.
It was just a hand on a head. And it was in this weird, mysterious warehouse that's, like, evocative of, like, the mysterious interiors that, like, WCW, like, Nitro and old yes. Raws would use. Like, these guys would just appear in weird warehouse.
Yeah,
looking...
or just a factory from the end of an 80s action movie where it's like, I don't know why we wound up here, but I don't know, it's a factory. There's, like, sparks.
Yeah.
But Kelly Preston, this is later on in the movie, but while we're talking about Kelly Preston, her one part in this movie is she appears out of nowhere with no explanation. First of all, we establish she has this giant weird CG tongue.
Oh, she has a weird tongue, yeah.
Yeah,
long
and
tongue.
Also, I don't know if she's, like, married to Travolta, because, like, at one point she's like, you promised me we're going to get a huge house when we're back on Cyclo after you're done with your tour here on Earth. So, like, I don't know, like, they've established that the Cyclos have numerous wives. Kerr has, like, five wives or whatever, and he wants to get rich and buy prettier ones, and so I have no idea what Kelly Preston's deal is, but there is this, like, alien bar going back to the beginning, and they drink this green stuff, and that's where we get a lot of, like, Travolta's just, like, frustrated monologuing and stuff like that, and it's always extremely cheesy and terrible. But yeah, it's early on here at the bar. We learn about Care and everything. We learn a little bit about Travolta being he's the security chief for Earth, and he's pissed because he has to stick around longer than he thought he had to.
Yeah, real quick, I just wanted to point out the cups in the bars. I get the future, things are going to change in the future, but I feel like the cup, for what it does, is the best at it. Like, you can't improve cup technology. It's already so
it's
good.
It's got to figure it out. You can do a straw if you want to, but you don't have to.
You don't need a straw. Sometimes you don't want a straw. It really depends. Like, if I'm drinking a coffee or something, I don't want a straw with a hot cup of coffee.
Right.
I mean, but there's a type of cup for every possible. Like, you have the Moscow Mule cup. You have, like, a plastic cups with little caps for kids, you know. It's already at its peak. We can't go anywhere with cups. But in the Cyclo universe... They put, like, weird material on the... Like, all the cups look like weird future cups that make absolutely no sense.
I don't know. There are ornate cups.
And it just seems like there are ornate cups, but this looked like it was like served some kind of function that was never explained.
I took it as being like, hey, this is where the top level like Cyclo executives or security people hung out, and they get some fancy cups there.
Do you remember what the cups look like?
They looked like the ooze canisters from Ninja Turtles 2: Secret of the Ooze.
I didn't like that. I don't like the cups.
I just like any time that there's like an alien like bar or something in a video game or a movie or something, it always has to be some like weird neon green or goop or something. It's never just like a normal looking liquid.
Yeah, well, that's the future for you.
Speaking of weird food, the prisoners here, so the humans, the man animals, are taken captive by the Cyclos. And they basically do, like, labor.
They're enslaved. For the Cyclos.
Yeah, and they're enslaved. And so they're in prison, and they get, like, fed goop from a hose. And at one point here, there's this big prison fight over food where Johnny Goodboy kind of establishes himself as, like, hey, I'm kind of the leader of the man animals. And there's constantly, like, attempts at revolting in this movie and, like, going against the Cyclo captors. And then they wind up getting caught, and then they revolt or escape again. This just goes back and forth so many different times that none of it really feels like it matters at all. But Travolta's whole thing in this movie is that he's got this scheme that he wants to train the man animals how to mine for gold. And for some reason, that would be, like, it's preposterous to let man animals work machinery and handle gold and do all this stuff. But Travolta's like, no, I'm going to find some smarter ones, and I'm going to teach them how to do this.
He wants to train them to mine gold. Mining gold, correct me if I'm wrong, is, like, just with a pickaxe, like, just hitting rocks, right? You don't need a formal education. These guys are already, like, operating complex pieces of machinery, these man animals that are enslaved.
Were they at this point?
Yeah, they were doing, like, all sorts of stuff that looked a lot more complex than mining.
Huh.
So it seems silly to me that he doesn't find the humans capable of doing that. Especially when, like, he arrived on Earth and he obviously saw the evidence of these cities and stuff. Obviously, humans were capable.
Yeah, and they had tools and stuff like that. They had sticks and stuff. Well, he does mention that when the Cyclos came down, that even with all the technology that man had at its peak, they only lasted 9 minutes against the Cyclo.
Okay, and then the humans used that very technology, like, what, 1,000 years later? Which is, I presume, really old. Like, I don't think fuel will retain its use for that long.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah,
I didn't think of that.
And so they weren't able to beat them 9 minutes when the machines were new. And now they're supposed to beat them? Now they can destroy the planet of Cyclo with this old-ass technology?
Well, it's the indomitable spirit of the human... Or the indomitable, soul of the humans? There's a thing people say that sounds nice and uses the big... Indomitable is a big word.
I'm just going to let you take this.
The spirit of, you know, mankind.
The
being like,
of
hey, the get up and go, the piss and vinegar, they're ready to go. Mm-hmm. The man... There's smarter ways of saying it, but basically the spirit of man rising up and fighting for...
Like a phoenix from the ashes?
Sure, yeah, okay. Yeah, they go to... at one point, they go to the Library of Congress, and they're, like, reading the Declaration of Independence and shit.
Oh, as if the paper would be, like, totally cool, like, 1,000 years later or whatever.
If it's still in the thing that they actually hold it in the Library of Congress, that's, like, some pretty, like, super temperature-controlled... But again, I don't know if power
is
would
it temp-
be...
Yeah, temperature-controlled. I mean, how does the fucking Fort Knox still have power? Like, they're able to turn lights on and operate, like, come on, it's, goddamn, this movie.
So we'll get to the Fort Knox and the technology stuff here, but basically, for a while, there's this back and forth about, like, Travolta doesn't want to get in trouble for proposing this mining thing. He wants to do it secretly, but he wants to frame Forrest Whitaker by, you know, filming him repeating the plan, so he has this, like, you know, backup, this, not collateral, but you know what I mean, like, hey, if you turn on me or whatever, like, I'm going to send this to the superiors and you're going to get, you know, put in jail or whatever. So he wants to teach Johnny Goodboy how to speak Cyclo, because he wants to, like, basically tell him the plan, and then he can tell it to the other man animals. So
because educating your enemy...
It could only go
well.
Yes, he puts him in this god machine, which it turns out is a knowledge machine, that basically beams information into your eyeballs. And Travolta does it to teach the Cyclo language to Johnny Goodboy, but I guess he just has access to everything because he's just, like, learning all sorts of things about, like, the origins of the Cyclo race and how they came here, and, like, way more things than the language that I think Travolta wanted to teach him. So I guess that wasn't, like, password protected. But yeah, he winds up going to the Denver Library. And Travolta takes him there as a, like, yeah, go ahead, take all the knowledge you want. You know, like, mankind wasn't able to do it at its peak. Like,
seems like an unwise choice.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly why he does that, but there's this weird part too where they're out in a field when, like, Travolta takes him to the kind of the mining area, and he just starts, like, shooting a bunch of cows.
Yeah, I didn't understand that part.
Yeah, he's just bored and a bad guy, so he's, like, shooting their legs off and stuff like that. And then he gets attacked by all the man animals, and then they spare him, being like, hey, all right, be cool, Turtle, like, we're sparing you. And so they hand him his gun, and of course he immediately, you know, turns heel again on him. And then that's when...
This movie is just a bunch of, like, enemies giving their enemies something useful against them.
Yeah, none of it makes any sense. The motivations are all extremely muddy. But this is when Kerr shows up with the girl we haven't really seen or heard about in forever. And she's got, like, this explosive Running Man collar around her neck.
Right.
And so it's basically like, hey, I got this remote control. I'm John Travolta, and I can detonate it from anywhere in the world. So don't fuck with me, or I'll blow up your girlfriend's head.
I'm John Travolta.
That was a weird line, I thought. But then he puts Johnny Goodboy in, like, a fucking flight simulator. Which, again, good point. Like, why would any of this stuff still work? Why would this stuff boot up and, like I'm
none of it would still work. You would never want to educate your, like, the thing you want to enslave and overpower to the point where it can use a plane. Like, similar technology to what they have, apparently, because they're able to just jump right into the planes and be totally fine.
Yeah, I think he wants to teach him, like, because he wants them to be able to, like, transport the gold once they mine it or something. But it's still, it's very questionable. Oh, you know what? That was the flight simulator for the Cyclo transport ships. So that's why he was giving him that. We find another flight simulator later.
Oh, right. Okay.
Once Johnny Goodboy gets his, he hatches his plan here. So basically, they are going to pretend to be mining for gold. I guess just totally... you know, unsurveilled, you know, like there's no Cyclo dudes sitting around watching.
Well, no, they were filming it, remember?
Well, and they had the button cams when they escaped earlier.
Well, they were watching him. They were, like, Turtle told them they were being surveilled, and, like, they were watching footage of them mining at their office.
Okay, so a bunch of them, I guess, were kind of keeping up the appearance of mining.
Remember how dumb it was when, I told you how dumb I thought it was when, like, they were like, we just have to pretend to mine? If you're going to go to the effort to pretend to mine.
Yeah, if you're leaving man animals behind to keep up appearances, just fucking do it.
Just
work.
Mine.
But then, if they're being surveilled, then why aren't they wondering why Johnny Goodboy is not there? Because Johnny Goodboy, while the rest are pretending to mine, is flying the Cyclo ship to Fort Knox because he read about it in the library and he knows there's a bunch of gold there. And so that way, they don't have to take all the time to mine because they can get all the gold really quickly from Fort Knox
and
fly
it
back. Well, no, that's because I think they were learning how to do stuff. Like, he was also teaching them geometry and shit, and he was teaching them about, like, human weapons and things like that. He flies a bunch of them down to Fort Hood in Texas, like this military base, and teaching them how to use, like, guns and rocket launchers and tanks and, like, fucking F-16s and stuff like that. So I think that's what they're spending the time doing while they're supposed to be mining. But there is this part where, like, Turtle shows up, and he's like, all right, where's the gold? And they give him a bunch of, like, perfect golden bars.
Perfectly smelted, yeah.
Yeah, from Fort Knox.
As if they would have time to do that.
Yeah, and so, thankfully, he does actually question that. That's one part where the movie actually kind of addresses shitty logic.
Well, I mean, he asks, why is it in bricks? But he doesn't really follow up. Like, did you seriously have time to do that?
Well, no, Johnny Goodboy does say, like, oh, you know, we wanted to make sure, you know, we're presenting this
very valuable... Dan, after he said, I have extra time, we had extra time to do it, so that's why we smelted them.
Yeah, he does say, like, he says, like,
but
oh,
in no realm of reality, even Cyclo reality, would the guys be able to mine all that shit and smelt it.
Yeah, Travolta is kind of like, well, if you've got time to do all that, then maybe I should have you working harder or
and
something.
He's just, he was reluctant to train them how to mine, but they already know how to smelt the gold, like, with no training.
That's a good point. Yeah, if these are just, like, completely uneducated people, how do they know how to smelt into perfect golden bars? A bunch of fights and shit happen here, and, like, all the man animals are flying, like, F-16s, and they've got, like, it's insane that they're able to fly these, like, modern by our time standards,
right,
like vehicles and stuff like that. That's the biggest leap in logic of the whole movie for me, is that they just all show up and, like, 10 of them are flying F-16s and shooting guns and all this stuff.
Yeah, and they've lived in a society completely devoid of technology for, I assume, like, hundreds of years.
Yeah, it's just, like, sticks and horses and eating rats and stuff like that. Now they're just flying, like, military jets from the year 2000. So, in the midst of all this, like, crazy climax stuff, which none of it is good, they manage to get... Johnny Goodboy gets one of those collars that's around the neck of his girlfriend and attaches it to Travolta's, like, upper arm without Travolta realizing it. Like, they're having kind of a scuffle and Travolta doesn't even feel this heavy-ass explosive on his arm. And he grabs the remote, I guess thinking that it's still on his girlfriend, on Johnny Goodboy's girlfriend, and Travolta, like, eh, and hits the button and just blows up his own arm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the end of that. And
then he's in a little jail cell.
Yeah, they put him in a jail cell in Fort Knox. I guess to rub it in, be like, huh, I guess you finally got your gold. And they also, somehow in the midst of all this, is the thing I didn't follow at all. I think most of this movie I followed at least to some degree, but I did not catch the part about them, like, transporting or teleporting a explosive two-planet cyclo that would release stuff into the atmosphere and blow up the entire planet like Smoke's Mortal Kombat 3 fatality.
Yeah, that part was lost in me as well. All of a sudden it was happening and I just thought, well, all right, at least it's almost done.
Yeah, they show this one guy, I think Carlo is his name, and it's like a very serious thing where it's like it's clear he's about to like sacrifice. It's like the end of Armageddon. And it's just like, wait, what's about to happen here? And he presses the button and it zooms out to this planet and the whole planet blows up. It's just like, wait, I don't remember this being discussed at all. They blew up the entire alien planet.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of this movie would happen,
see,
honestly.
I think the movie's like pretty much done at that point.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I have a lot of issues with this movie.
Let's run them down.
I mean, look, it's what can I say that hasn't already been said about Battlefield Earth? It's been a running joke since it came out. But it just was really hard to follow. I couldn't hear anything. Yeah. I didn't know anyone's name. I didn't know what the motivations were. John Travolta's character, as a villain, like, he's in 95% of the scenes. Like, it ruins any villain mystique he might have.
Yeah,
like, think of, like, Blade Runner 2049. Jared Leto was in that movie for one or two scenes.
Yeah, or, like, Jaws, when Jaws you don't even see for, like, an hour or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. There was just horrible acting and nothing made sense and nothing matters. Nothing matters in life. This movie makes me question the meaning of life.
I felt bad for every actor that was not Travolta, because Travolta obviously is super invested in this. But guys like Forrest Whitaker and most of the other actors, I just kind of felt bad for.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to know, looking at this dialogue, how bad it would be. I guess maybe, you know, you wouldn't know while you're making the movie, like how bad the CG and everything is going to look and just how corny everything's going to be. But oh, just everything from the direction to the acting to the dialogue to the special effects
were terrible.
It's an embarrassing movie.
Yeah, it's not good at all. And it's like it's shady as fuck too, because like, you know, they said like, oh, this has nothing to do with Scientology and this and that, but it's obvious that they just wanted to introduce it to younger people. You know, kids who might like the sci-fi stuff, you know what I mean? And then would then be subsequently interested in L. Ron Hubbard and his whole body of work.
Yeah, I was reading a critique about how it was weird that during the lead up to this movie, Travolta was going to do signings for it at bookstores by signing Hubbard's book.
Yeah.
Which the same critique I was reading is like, well, you know, when Michael Caine shows up in the Cider House Rules, you know, when he's promoting the movie, he's not going around signing the book. You know, that's not really how that works. So it is kind of a clear thing that like they want to get like Hubbard out to people, even
yeah,
if
it's
not
really
the
weird
like belief system. It's just the Hubbard, you know, catalog or whatever.
Strange choice.
Yeah. But they did not make that second movie, so we don't need to watch any more of that.
The movie lost a ton of money.
I know we've said this a lot, but like this is one of those that is not fun bad to sit through. Like I feel like Kindergarten Cop 2, as far as Panning the Stream stuff we've done, that was fun bad. Like we were not constantly checking like, oh god, how much
that was bad.
It was objectively terrible, but we weren't doing the thing where like, okay, here's a good example. During Kindergarten Cop 2, you never asked me how much time there was left. Uh-huh. During Real Rob, after the first episode, you were like, oh god, how many more of these are we watching? How much time is there? You asked once during Real Rob, because Real Rob was fucking terrible. This one, I think there were at least 8 or 9 times that I paused and you would ask how much time is left and you would see the timestamp and be like, oh god, no. And just feel this like sinking feeling. Like, I think that might make this the worst thing we've watched.
It's not good. I mean, but, you know, I didn't expect it to be good. It's
oh, no.
It lived up to the expectations I had. You know, even the slightly raised expectations. I mean, it was, it had some grandeur to it. I mean, it was large in scope. Planet surfing. It was a planetary adventure.
So wait, any movie with just planets in it?
It was ambitious.
I guess it was ambitious. Well, I mean, it's like Pulp Fiction in the year 3000. It's Star Wars only better. It's this Schindler's List of sci-fi. So yeah, it did have grand ambitions for sure.
Yeah.
This was from a real glory period of Travolta where he had his initial period of fame with Saturday Night Fever and Grease and all that stuff and Welcome Back, Kotter. And then he did a bunch of bad projects that made him kind of like really go down as far as like Hollywood prestige goes. And then Pulp Fiction in 94 comes out. All of a sudden, Travolta's a star again. I remember this. I was like 10 years old, and it's like, oh, I guess this guy's a big star again. He was in a ton of work again, and then he was able to start picking his scripts again, and like he had done before, he's picking a lot of Battlefield Earths and Swordfishes and, you know.
Oh, Swordfish.
And then the occasional, the diamond in the rough with like Face Off. But
Face Off is a great movie, but I gotta say, John Travolta, not a great actor.
he is a very bad actor.
Yeah, he's bad.
He's bad at that thing that he does for a living.
It's just not believable.
He somehow managed to just fall into a whole career making a bunch of money doing this and being very famous without being good at that thing that he does.
Well, good for him, I guess.
Sure, he managed to weasel his way into fame and fortune. But.
But.
That is it for Battlefield Earth.
Battlefield Earth, that's it.
Next up, I can't really imagine something that is more different than Battlefield Earth. We are going to be watching something that you chose here that I have not seen.
Nor have I.
Have you not? Okay, so
I mean,
are you...
I've seen the show, but not this particular season of it.
Okay, so we are referring to The Real World on MTV, a show which I have not really seen anything outside of, like, some SNL parodies and Chappelle Show parodies.
The Real World is 9 people who live together, work together, and have their lives taped.
And things stop getting nice and start getting real?
That's right.
I know that much.
yeah.
And The Miz was on it.
The Miz was on it, but we're watching the very first season, so this is going to be a nice time capsule of the early 90s.
This will be 1992, so I did not watch it back then. I would have been 8 years old, but it is always interesting just seeing things from eras in which I remember from my childhood, so I'm sure it's going to be a really interesting time capsule. So this one's going to be a bit different. We're not going with a traditional streaming service for this one. This one you will have to go to mtv.com. The first episode of season one is unlocked for everyone. If you want to watch episodes 2 and 3, which we're going to cover, you will just need to log in with a cable provider, you know, a DirecTV or Comcast or whatever you have access to. So if you can do that, watch episode 2 and 3. But no matter what you have, you can watch episode 1 of season 1 of The Real World. That will be next week.
That will be.
You always make fun of me at the end.
Well, you say it weirdly.
That, okay, that will be. That will be next week.
It's a little smoother, like your...
That will be next week on
Panning
the Strain.
Like your Fraser Crane.
I've never seen that.
He doesn't have a radio show, and he's like a smooth talking...
You've never seen it either.
He's like a smooth talking doctor.
Is
like
he smooth? Kelsey Grammer?
No,
I don't think about smooth talking.
No, not smooth, like smooth, like cool, but smooth.
A baritone?
Like, no, smooth like jazz, you know?
Oh, okay. Just like laid back, relax.
Yeah,
next
yeah.
week on Panning the Stream, we're going to take a look. Okay.
Do
All
it.
Right.
Do it.
Your impression of me is just... Next week.
I hear like a trumpet tooting when you do...
Great. Good to know I have a silky, smooth, cool voice. Thanks, honey.
Can you do your coolest voice in signing us out?
Well, I still have stuff to... I have a lot of stuff to
but
say.
But can
before.
You do it all in a really cool voice?
At the very end, I'll try to switch
Why
into a cool voice.
Why can't you do it the whole way?
Because there's too much to say.
So
I can't stay cool for
challenge.
That long.
It'll be a fun challenge.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank you for watching Panning the Stream. My name's Dan Reichert, and I'm joined here... I'm just doing the Jeremiah voice. I'm joined here by my wife, Bianca Reichert.
Yes, Dan. Thank you for having me.
And I especially want to thank folks. We've introduced the listener support feature from Anchor. So for folks that want to support the podcast, support Panning the Stream, you can go to...
Tell me more.
You can go to panningthestream.com and click the Support This Podcast button. You can support us at $1, $5, or $10 a month. If you enjoy the work that we're doing here on Panning the Stream, that'd be greatly appreciated. You could also leave us a review on iTunes. A 5-star review would be great. Thanks to Tom Monda of Thank You Scientist for the theme song, which you should hear in the background right now for Panning the Stream. We will be back next week. If you've got any feedback for us, please send it to panningthestream@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Send feedback at panthestream. Thank you all for listening, and thank you first and foremost to Bianca Reichert sitting across the table from me.
You thanked me second.
Last and mostly.
You thanked everyone, and then you said first and foremost.
I know, but just...
This is like when we were leaving McDonald's, and you thanked the guy for letting you hold the door for him.
It was in the social
so
situation.
That
I just
freeze
up completely. All right. Thanks,
really
folks.
It was amazing to watch.
No, I'm sure it was great. Thanks, folks, for listening. Thanks for supporting the podcast. And thanks to Bianca for joining me. We will see you next week on Panning the Stream with The Real World, Season 1, Episodes 1 through 3.